who talks to her about her encaustic painting and printmaking.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Elise Wagner. She is working mainly in the medium of encaustic, and she's an independent artist and teacher. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Elise.
Thanks for having me.
I should point out, you used to have a show on KBOO in the 80s.
Yes, I did. It was called The Random Hours because it was from 1:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the morning.
And what did you play?
I played Brian Eno, The Cure, Joy Division, all the really great music of the day in the 1980s, Talking Heads, David Byrne, et al., King Crimson.
So now you were most recently at Butters Gallery, which is closing at the end of January. You were also at Laura Russo and Quarter Saw.
Yes, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
My whole history in Portland, I guess I started exhibiting here in Portland in 1995. And then I showed at Quarter Saw, which is a emerging art gallery run by Victoria Fry, who is now at Pica. And from there, I went to Laura Russo Gallery, now Russo Lee Gallery. And then for 15 years after that, I was showing at Butters Gallery.
Mm. So you also have commercial you're with commercial galleries in Washington, D.C., Houston, Seattle, and Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. So you kind of spread pretty wide. You know, you've been here, but you're kind of national too. What interests me is, one, you have a very strong presence on Instagram, and that's part of your work and how you promote yourself. And mm-hmm. you also are a teacher, so you can kind of make a living as an artist. You've got your own mix to that formula. So that's what I want to.
Definitely,
I want people to understand how you're doing it.
Well, it's really important to have multiple streams of income, and so I do that by teaching, and then I create work pretty much continually, and I have a really large inventory of artwork that I can move around. I'm always actively looking for grant opportunities and other galleries to show my work at, and regularly submit to galleries. And then I'm an Airbnb host. So oftentimes people, because I teach independently in my studio in North Portland, I have people come from all over the place to take my classes, and sometimes they can stay at my Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Is that
and so
a separate
it works out
house?
Really nicely. No, it's actually my studio is a separate space, but my Airbnb room is just a small room off of my kitchen that used to be my office.
Mm-hmm.
So I just make it work. And the other way in which I make it work is I rent out my cellar studio to an artist who comes and paints every day, and she shows at Basic Space Gallery. Her name is Liz McDonald, and I have this wonderful little kind of micro community at my house. I call it Wagnerica because there's a lot of things going on there, and they're always creative. There's either people coming to pick up work to hang it somewhere, or there's my artist tenant, or there's a student coming for a private class, or many different ways that there's just traffic at my house. People coming to stay that aren't students, that are just Airbnb guests wanting to move to Portland.
Yeah.
A lot of variety, a lot of social. My pets love it. They're very friendly.
Mm-hmm. What do you got, a dog?
I do. I have a golden doodle named Cleo, and I have a little gray kitty named Rothko.
So is Rothko an influence?
Rothko is an influence, and there's a special connection with Rothko, Mark Rothko. I share a birthday with him. And when I was in college at Portland State, I had a studio in Shattuck Hall, and that was where he went to elementary school. So
really?
It was really just kind of this energy. I don't know. I just felt this energy with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to the Rothko Chapel several times because my parents settled in. They ended up moving from New Jersey to Houston. So I've been to the Rothko Chapel many times, and I've seen his work everywhere.
Are you excited about the Rothko Pavilion at the Portland Art Museum?
I'm very excited. And I was actually quite disappointed that he didn't get the bridge name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I really wanted that. Yeah.
So just talk about your art, because it's abstract and it's encaustic. And just what is encaustic?
Encaustic painting is an ancient medium that originated in Greco-Roman times that is a combination of natural beeswax, resin, and pigment. And you paint it onto a hard surface, usually like birch panel, and you fuse it with heat, a blowtorch, an iron, or any number of heated tools. A heat gun is also a popular fusing method for it. And you can layer it and make it translucent, just like you would with watercolor or oil paint, but it has like a real, it's just so seductive, and it has a real translucency to it, and also a really quick drying time. I was attracted to doing it really through a demonstration I saw in college, and then I taught myself how to do it while I was living in a storefront studio in Northeast Portland.
So you have a guy down the block who makes these birch panels for
mm-hmm.
you, so you need a hard, smooth surface.
Right.
So he delivers a panel, and what do? You cook up a big pot of wax, and do you pour it or paint it? Or?
I paint it on. You have to use hog hair brushes with it, or, you know, you don't want to use, like, nylon brushes. And so he makes the panels, and then I store them in my studio, and then when I get to them, I tape the sides off. That's usually the first thing I do, because the wax drips all over the panel, the sides, and it's just a mess. So I do that first. And then I prime the panels, which I'm about to do today, actually, and with many layers of different white pigmented waxes. And then I draw upon imagery that I see through, like, Instagram has been really wonderful for me in terms of just being able to follow places like NASA Goddard and the International Space Station and all of these sources of visual information, because I can't travel to the glaciers, but I am really concerned about what's happening climate-wise, and so I can draw upon all of these different images, and it's kind of my palette, or my source of inspiration, is to see a lot of different imagery. So I'll start preparing my palette according to seeing different images that really spark my imagination. And I will mix natural beeswax with the, you know, the color of the pigment. And then I can vary the translucency of that color. So it could be super opaque, it could be, you know, really thin and transparent. And
where do you get the color? What kind of paint? Is it paint?
It is. Well, I make the paint, but there's also a paint company that I can, I actually demonstrate for them, and I will be doing a demonstration for R&F Encaustics, or R&F Handmade Paints, at Artists and Craftsmen at the end of February. So they can be pre-made, and you can buy them that way. But I mostly make a big batch of the natural beeswax combined with the resin first, and then I will ladle, literally take a ladle that I got at City Liquidators long, long ago, and ladle the clear medium into a can, and then put the pigment in it to the point that I want the color. And then I just do color swatches, and I get the color exactly the way I want it, and I go.
But that, in that pot with the color, it's a thick medium at that point? Is it hot?
It's hot, but it's not pasty. It's very fluid. It's a very fluid medium, but it also sets up very quickly. So you have to leave it on the heat all the time when you're working with it. And just make sure it stays at a consistent temperature.
Do you have a stove in your studio?
No, I did once, but then I had a fire and I got rid of it. I have about 8 pancake griddles, and they all have different colors of wax on them based on, you know, like I've got a warm palette and a cool palette, and then a palette just for clear, medium, and white. And I just, everything's on wheels in my studio, so everything is mobile. I have a cart that's mobile with the electrical on it, and I just move it around. It's got a really long extension cord. One thing I've learned from this medium is that you have to have a lot of extension cords, and you have to be able to move around. So once I figured that out, and I got everything put on wheels, I was fine.
What's the ventilation like?
I have a ventilation fan that's above a window, and that seems to work really well. I keep the windows open on either side, and you just need cross mm-hmm. ventilation. It's really important.
Is it toxic?
It's not toxic. Yeah, it's not terribly toxic as long as you leave it on the consistent temperature that it needs to be at and you have proper ventilation. It has what's great about it is that it has a very high flash point, so it's not like working with petroleum waxes at all. You know, it's a lot easier to keep it at a consistent temperature, and it doesn't get rancid or spoil in any way.
So your recent work has been about glaciers shrinking mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. also about North Portland gentrification
yes.
or changing boundaries.
Right.
So if you go to your website, what's it called?
EliseWagner.com.
And it's actually sort of optimized for mobile. It's a very slick kind of website for an artist,
yeah,
right?
It's a Squarespace site. I made it myself, and it was really pretty easy to do that. And it's a work in progress, as my studio is and all of my work is.
And then there's an image there which has it's a grid, and then it has a sort of outlined odd shape, mm-hmm. sort of rectilinear shape. What is that piece called?
Yeah, I have this one piece that I just finished. It's about to get bolted together. It's called My Portland Parcel 1010, Lot 10, Block 10. And that refers to my house, Lot 10, Block 10, in North Portland, that is designated for commercial building upon. And so I can build 7 stories up on that. And what I did was, with the abstract outline of that image, is I took the image of my property from Portland Maps, and I superimposed it on top of a glacial type of surface, or, you know, referencing the color of glaciers.
It's kind of blue and white and gray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the green of what I saw, the colors of the Portland maps is what I kind of imparted on that. And it's kind of just addressing the macro, which is the growing concern and the critical concern of climate change that we're in right now, combined with the micro concern that I have, which is that there are literally buildings going up all around me. In fact, a house was demolished across the street from me in October, and a homeless person has taken up residence there until they decide when they're going to be ready to build on there. And they're going to have, on this tiny lot, they're going to have a 3-story, 12-unit apartment complex.
This is North Portland, just west of Mississippi.
Yes, immediately west of Mississippi, just right off of Interstate Avenue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's the idea of combining two kind of different ideas like that?
I think it's just, it's extremely personal for me. So I'm not sure what the idea is on the scale of, you know, if it's something that's even consumable as art, but it's like something that was really important to me to draw upon because it was happening to me, this whole thing, and I'm not quite sure how it's all going to resolve itself. And very similar to what's happening with climate change, you know, the evidence is there. My work is very much based in scientific discovery and evidential fact. And so, you know, even with that, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, because there are certain people that are not taking that evidence into account. And we're all passively watching this happen. And so that's very much what's happening in my own, you know, day-to-day living environment.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Elise Wagner. She's an independent artist working in the medium of encaustic, and she's also a teacher. So, Elise, you teach at home, but you also teach in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
How important is it for you to patch together a kind of a teaching practice?
My teaching schedule is pretty important. It's an important part of my income stream. So I teach in the studio. I try to do that, schedule it out. You know, maybe once every other month I'll teach a class that people sign up for, but I pretty much have switched to just private instruction, or semi-private, where people will set something up. So it's a pretty vital part of my income. And the Mexico opportunity has been 2 years in the running now, and it really seems to be picking up some momentum. And then other than that, I also have taught in New York and Connecticut and DC areas. I just went on this teaching tour, you know, of teaching printmaking at different ateliers in the DC, New York, and Connecticut area.
So you kind of made your own printmaking style, correct? Or some kind of method?
Yeah, I do a variation on calligraph printing, where calligraph printing is where you build a calligraph, which is a collaged plate to print from. So you collage stuff on a plate, and then you print it out. You put ink on it and you run it through an etching press. And what I did was I make and formulate a white wax that I replace the collage materials with, and I exploit the texture of wax, and then I apply
which
these.
Which is what? Smooth?
It's textured, you know, so it's like brush strokes. You can emboss fabric texture. You can emboss any kind of like object in there and then take it out of the wax, and then it will leave an imprint. So I use these non-toxic soy and honey-based inks, which ironically make a great marriage between the wax and the actual print. So I kind of married the encaustic techniques with traditional intaglio calligraph printmaking techniques.
If somebody takes that class, what do they come away with? Do they then have to buy their own pancake griddle and
yeah, if they wanted to do it, they, you know, you, what's good is you only need a tiny little griddle, and that's what it's actually called if you Google it on Amazon, or it is a little griddle, and just one can of my wax or any white wax, and then you would need an etching press or access to one. But what you'd come away from the class with is a plexiglass plate that you have a collagraph on, that there's some wax on there, and you can make a number of prints from that one plate. You can mm-hmm. make up to 20 prints, and then you can always go in and augment the print, the plate. You could go in and correct the plate or accentuate it, or if it gets crushed down too much from printing it, you can build it up again.
But so. you've got this plate, and what do you do? You roll paint over it and press it on paper, or what?
Yeah, I paint the ink onto there using a stencil brush, because you really want to get it into the nooks and crannies that the texture of the wax creates. So I do that, and then I wipe it, and it's just an incredible. A lot of the time, the look of the plate itself with the ink on it is like, just that's fine the way it is just then. But they do make these beautiful prints that are very full of depth, and I'm going to be actually exhibiting one of them at the Byte Studio Love and Print event on February 1st.
Is that in Portland?
Yeah, it is. They're on Southeast 7th.
Byte, B-I-T-E?
B-I-T-E Studios. And 40% of the proceeds go to Pear, which is kind of a nice thing.
Mm-hmm. So you've got this plate. You paint one color on it, print it on paper, and then what, wash it and then do another color?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can also take a plate that does not have any wax on it and just put a background color on there. and then print that, and then print the collagraph over it superimposed, and it makes just beautiful work. And a lot of the time I'll make much larger prints, and then I'll mount them onto my big panels, and then I'll put layers of wax over those and turn them into paintings.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of my way of strategizing that work on paper doesn't, it's not very popular to sell as far as, you know, it just doesn't seem like there's a market for it. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes will mount the prints on paper, on the panel, and use different papers, like a Japanese Kozo papers work, or Kitakata, or Sakamoto papers. All kinds of different papers work with it. It's amazing. And those are very malleable to working with encaustic too, the papers themselves.
And do most people who do this make a abstract image in the end, or a figurative?
Usually abstract, yeah. My work tends to be abstract. It's about creating kind of an atmosphere and an environment. And so what I teach my students to do is like work with different types of line and how to create line. And so we do a lot of dry point. And then we do line making using different batik tools and all these different ways to etch into the wax, etch into the plate, and create depth just through that.
How do you etch into wax?
You basically use ceramic tools for using encaustic.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's any ceramic tool will be
so
fine.
So all those little tiny chisel things that people mm-hmm. use in a clay studio mm-hmm. on a soft clay?
Yeah.
They all work on wax.
Yeah, as long as they're metal tipped, you're good to go. Mm-hmm. You don't want to use anything plastic because you can't really clean it very easily.
So what I love about encaustic and your work as well in particular is how analog it is. It's very wood panels, paintbrushes, hot wax. There's no Photoshop involved. You know, you're not projecting, you're not taking photos or any of that. It's a solidly analog art form, mm-hmm. but your other half of your life, it seems, is as a digital sort of marketer of yourself, right? You're all over Instagram. How many Instagram mm-hmm. accounts you got?
I have 3 Instagram accounts.
Right. And then you've got 2 Facebook, your personal and your sort of artist page.
Yeah. And then I have a page for my workshops on Facebook as well.
Right. And then you've got to do all this computer work at some point in the day. So how do you balance mm-hmm. the actual down and dirty art making
right.
with the hunched over the laptop kind of life?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I recently transitioned from laptop to desktop, and that's posing some real challenges for me, actually, because no longer can I bring my computer into the studio, which is a good thing. It's a good thing. There's a real separation going on. So I get up in the morning and I have my coffee. I get up really early in the morning and I just try to usually like 5:30 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, usually just try to do my hydrating, meditating and yoga practice straight away. And then I have my coffee, and then I do my computer stuff for a couple of hours, and then I walk the dog, and then I turn on my wax, and I wait for the wax to melt. Usually, I will be waiting for the wax to melt oftentimes when I'm doing that digital stuff. So, you know, if I ever have a book, it'll be called Waiting for the Wax to Melt.
And digital stuff is what? Just cruising around Instagram looking for images or answering people personally?
Answering inquiries from the website, managing my workshop schedule, corresponding with students that are coming, and making sure my ducks are in a row with that, keeping my website updated with my workshop schedule and also with my imagery and what's new, pushing content from the website to my social media channels is a really big part of what I do.
Yeah.
Plus
you're an Airbnb host, so you got to go on the air, right, and do stuff?
Yeah, not really, though. I mean, you know, that's just kind of like on autopilot at this point. But, you know, and now it's particularly slow time of year, but I do have guests coming and going, you know, but it's slowed down quite a bit. The other thing I do is I manage my lists. I do a lot of MailChimp. Like, my full-time job really should be, like, social media MailChimp manager. So I have like you know, four or five mailing lists that I'm managing and coordinating and scheduling out drops for mailings, email drops and stuff like that. So it's all very technical and a lot, and I keep wanting to write the job description for somebody soon.
Somebody else to do all this. Yeah. Could it be done by a 4 hours a day kind of helper?
Yeah. I think I'm going to be placing an ad soon on the RAC website about needing a part-time person, because I just can't, I can't manage it all. It's just too much.
Does it eat into your personal time or your art-making time?
Yeah, it's very hard to define the personal time, actually. And I aspire to one day travel somewhere where I'm not having to work.
I should point out to the listeners, this interview itself is eating into your personal time, because it's a Sunday lunchtime and you should have been working or doing something else.
It's a perfectly rainy day.
But you agreed to do this for KBOO and for Art Focus, and we're endlessly grateful.
Yes, thank you.
So in the last minute, you have a kind of vision. So you want to build on your property and go into a kind of make it like a ground floor studio. So you'd have a mixed-use tall building.
Yeah, yeah.
And this would be your long-range sort of business.
I should point out, too, that while I'm sitting here, we are waiting for the wax to melt.
Okay.
I turned it on before I left. So
you won't go home and find your house burned down.
No, I won't. I'll be ready to work, and that's what I want. Yeah, the vision is to live in a penthouse on the top with a view and have my studio in a commercial space on the ground floor, and possibly have some studio space to rent out as well. But, you know, there's this big giant dream that has been taken down from collaborating with my two adjacent neighbors to me to just distill down to what my vision is. And what I need to do to sustain myself and stay part of the creative culture in North Portland rather than get pushed out like everybody else. So initially I wanted to, you know, have affordable studios and be the person to do that. But then I realized I can't shepherd all this stuff. And I really need to think about what would be good for me in the long term. And as I approach, you know, retirement, whatever that means to an artist. I mean, artists don't retire. But
Some of them give up and just get a day job, you know?
Yeah,
It sounds like you're against that.
I'm not against that. I'm always teetering on that threshold. And I did have a day job for many years at Portland State. And I've gone in and out of needing to do that. I have a wonderful collector base in Portland and beyond, and I have a wonderful support network, and something always happens. So I'm very grateful for that.
So Butters is closed, but you've got other galleries, but you've also got a you've got your own mailing list, and you sold some work yesterday, right?
Yeah. I sell independently. And I'm going to continue doing that, and I have a wonderful resource available to me that I'm just going to continue tapping into, and an aspect of my website also offers a subscription option. So I'm going to be looking into learning how to work with the subscription option on my website.
Right, that's Squarespace. So yeah. Instead of doing Patreon, you like Squarespace has its own thing, and you could. You cut out the middleman that
way. Yeah, and then just have people, you know, like OPB, $5 a month, be a sustainer, you know, like so drawing upon that and then having incentives and tiers of support.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love talking to you because you're a working artist making a living, and you've kept up with the digital age and while having a very analog practice. That's a very unique, you know, situation you're in.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but I do manage both ends of it somehow. I think I have the business skills combined with the art skills, and I'm grateful for that.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Elise Wagner. She's an independent artist working mainly in the encaustic medium. And you can find her on Instagram. I think that's the best place. Elise Wagner Studio. Thanks so much for coming in, Elise.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
K-Book Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd at the Milagro Theater in Portland. La Segua is a Central American cautionary folktale of a young, beautiful woman whom philandering men encounter on their way back home. Her beauty decays into a horror that drives the men mad. The play tells the story of a beautiful woman who was haunted by the specter of La Segua and takes a hard look at Costa Rican values, including ambition, hypocrisy, and follows themes of machismo, vanity, and narcissism. Again, that's La Segua, running February 7th to March 2nd on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.